All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by The Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we're going to be talking about kind of a continuation of killer sales ads, and also we'll be discussing the 8 components of an irresistible direct response offer.
There you go.
Irresistible. Right. You can't irresistible. Resist.
Impossible. Absolutely impossible. If you use the 8 components.
That's right. All right. If you leave one out, it will be completely resistible.
Yep. That's how it goes. All or nothing. But we'll be finishing up first, you know, the PDF from Clayton Makepeace that we started a couple episodes ago.
Yes.
And we'll be picking up with the 75 most powerful words and phrases in the English language and how to put them to work for you. So
that's a good follow-up to our last episode, right?
Yeah, it really is, because exactly what to say. That was a great interview with Mr. Phil M. Jones. So if you haven't heard that one, go back and listen to that one.
Yes.
So before we get into our beers, I wanted to share, I sent you a text earlier today, and I thought this was a great example of kind of a blue ocean idea for a product.
Okay.
And I wanted to share that with you. I don't know if you saw the text or not.
Yes.
So my daughter does dog sitting, right? Mm-hmm. And she went to work today, and on the counter there was a note that said "treat for Diesel," which is our dog. Mm-hmm. And on top of this note was from Bush. It was a can of dog brew by Bush, as in Anheuser-Busch, as far as I can tell.
What is that? Pork bone. What does it say at the top? Pork bone.
Pork bone broth.
Broth. Okay. So that's literally a dog's beer.
Yeah. So it says, is this actually, so it came, and it also came with like FAQ about the stuff. Right. So, but I was like, beer for dogs. Like, that's blue ocean right there. Right.
Yeah,
you could start absolutely a craft brewery, or you could just start a dog craft brewery. Like, that's blue ocean thinking. If you've not read the book Blue Ocean, you know, it's instead of competing with everybody else in a red ocean, you go out and you start your own blue ocean product. But so the FAQs, I just thought it was funny. It's good marketing too. Is this actually a beer for dogs? Yes. Can humans drink it? Sure. But it's made for a dog's palate. Yeah. It's made for a dog's palate. You may find it bland, and yes, we've tried it. Is it alcoholic? Does it contain carbonation? No. It is not alcoholic and does not contain hops or carbonation.
It's not good for your puppy.
Yeah. So it's fine for the dog, the beer, this version of the beer. So, you just basically pour it in their bowl, or you can pour it over their food, either one, to give them a little bit of a dog brew treat. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea.
Where would you find this at the grocery store? Would you find this at your local?
I
don't know,
because it says scan to shop, and I have not scanned to shop yet. So I don't know. I could do that real quick, and then see where it takes me.
Available at these fine local establishments.
Shopbeergear.com.
Okay.
Yeah, shopbeergear.com. That's hard to say. So I'll accept the cookies. Yeah, you have to be 21 and older. So we'll just go with January 1st. When was I born? We'll go with I don't know. Oh, missed it. I accidentally closed it. So anyway, I'll put a note. I'll send a note where you can get it, but shopbeergear.com is apparently one of the places. But so back to human beer.
So apparently this place carries real beer. I mean, you have to be 21 to enter. So
yeah, it's got some kind of alcohol in it. So, okay. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you're a big craft beer drinker and you take your dog to like a beer garden, like a lot of people do,
sure.
you could take along a little 6-pack of this for your pup and they don't get left out. Yeah, I think it's a pretty cool idea.
So when you first sent me that text today, I literally thought that was an actual beer. That was, I didn't know this was for the dog.
It's for the dog. Yeah, absolutely. So
I mean, there's a new market. That's a, like you said, blue ocean strategy. Why compete when you can just create new markets?
Yeah, and you know, people love their dogs.
Exactly.
And the dog will drink the same thing over and over for 30 mm-hmm. years. So
yeah.
Yeah. So you don't need as many flavors. All right. So let's get back to people beer.
Okay.
So I've got one from our sponsor, the Original Craft Beer Club.
Ah, cue up. Producer, let's go. Producer. Come on. You guys back there, you're sleeping. There we go. Nah.
It's a man. Good help is hard to find. Good help is hard to find, even in a pandemic. We'll just call it the virtual lag. All right. Yeah. So this is also from Riverhouse Brewing Company. So I'll let you talk about the original craft beer club first, yes. And then I'll jump in.
So this segment of our episode is brought to you by our friends over at the Original Craft Beer Club. Outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries in the US of A. One of the best ways to sample these unique beers is by letting the guys over at the Original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and tasting to bring you the best beer discoveries in the country. Why be disappointed by a beer that you're not sure about, right? Not to mention that, like you said, during the pandemic, if you're in an area, if you live in part of the country where you're completely... You don't know. I mean, this second wave, people are talking about another lockdown. I hope that doesn't happen. But if you can't go out to your local establishment or your grocery store, or you don't want to deal with the shame of people looking at you for not wearing a mask or vice versa, then you might just want to have beers brought to you, right? And so that's where you go to the Original Craft Beer Club. You can find out more by visiting them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. Sean, you got one.
I do. And this one is just like the last episode, is from River Horse Brewing Company. So I talked a little bit about these guys, but they were founded in 1995. So they're kind of ahead of the craft beer club renaissance. And kind of changed ownership in 2007 and then moved facilities in 2013. And we talked a little bit about them, like what River Horse is, but basically the hippo is the River Horse.
Oh, so yeah.
There's a picture of the old hippo again.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's their mascot. And this is a River Horse chocolate porter. How about that?
That looks really good.
Yeah. So wait till you hear this description. I've never heard this description on a chocolate porter or chocolate anything, right? You'll know it when you hear it. All right, so it's 6.5% ABV American porter, a brown porter brewed with dark roasted malts, Madagascar vanilla beans, and a pound of chocolate per barrel.
Wow, a pound.
There you go. A pound of chocolate per barrel. That is great, like really
it's like Willy descriptive Wonka
to
type.
Me. Yeah, this is what Willie drinks after five. The River Horse Chocolate Porter is a decadent brew with notes of vanilla, coffee, almond, and chocolate on the nose, flavors of nutty chocolate, vanilla coffee, and mildly sweet malts make this flavorful, an enjoyable offering. Cheers. So I'm going to open mine with my 50 cal Man Crate bullet bottle opener.
I love that opener.
I know, right? I love having it on my desk. Makes me feel powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it won't really do much because there's no gunpowder in it, but...
Oh, well. It's just intimidating looking.
I could stab somebody with it. That's right. I had to. Hand-to-hand combat. Bayonets fixed. All right. So what do you have over there in Knoxville?
So I have a, let's pull this up here. It is a Paulaner. Southern version is the Paulaner.
Paulaner. Sounds like a golfer at the Masters. It is Masters weekend. So.
It is.
Which is weird because it's November.
Just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Did you know, so ESPN Game Day is going to be at the Masters tomorrow.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, because half the football games have been canceled for tomorrow. So it makes sense to be at the Masters.
They'll actually get to enjoy it because they won't even have to keep up with the games.
That's right.
All right.
So I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but this is a Marzen. It is a amber style beer that was developed over 200 years ago to celebrate the original Oktoberfest. The Märzen name comes from March beer because it was originally brewed in March to be a peak flavor for the Oktoberfest celebration. So they start early, so it's ready for Oktoberfest. And today, this style is available year-round in the U.S. due to popular demand. I'll tell you, it is it's only 5.8% ABV. Ingredients, malted hops, or I'm sorry, malted barley hops, Hercules hops, blah, 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 Pilsner malt, blah, blah, blah.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. All right, let's try it. Forget it. Forget all that stuff.
All right.
Let's see what it looks like. I'm not sure. I was a little skittish on this one because it was, you know, your one of these Märzen beers. It's got a nice color, though. It's got a nice amber color.
Yeah, there you go. It's nice.
All right. So,
all right, here we go.
Cue up beer. There we go.
Wow. Ooh,
man.
Oh, that is def.
that is def. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that was quite the aftertaste there for you. Like a delayed aftertaste. So this, like, you can taste the chocolate in this. Like, this has, like, as soon as you put it up to your nose, you can smell the chocolate. And then definitely taste the chocolate. But it's not like, it's not like an imperial porter, you know, imperial stout or anything where it's super sweet. It's good. It's like a good, like, after dinner beer. You probably have one. You wouldn't have two or three of them. It's a little too rich for that. But yeah, it's good. It reminds me, even though it didn't have the peanut butter, it reminds me of like a peanut butter chocolate stout or peanut butter stout or something like that, or porter. I guess it's a porter, which we know from the last episode, you can't actually tell apart. So, so yeah, this is good. I think it's one of those ones that will continue to get better as it airs. Just like the last one did. I forgot to mention that on the last show, but that just kept getting better. So yeah, I like it. It's not as roasty as the stout that I had on the last episode, but it's really good. Definitely more chocolate, a little less coffee.
Sure.
So good. So I'd give this a solid 4.
Solid 4? Okay.
Yeah. I like it. Back in the wheelhouse of the dark beers.
This one is a little, it's a little bitter. So I don't know. I'm having a hard time because the last one was, you know, the contrast between the cake therapy that I had on the last one, which is a little heavier, but this one's lighter, but it's a little, I don't know. There's just a little, it's got a bitter taste.
Almost done with it already though.
Yeah.
I have to. Can't be too bitter.
I had to take about 4 swigs to see. I'm going to give this one a 2. I'm going to have to give it like a 2.6. Yeah, okay. Sorry. And it's just not a big fan of this.
Not a Märzen fan. Okay.
Not a Märzen fan.
At least not this one.
And it's a shame because this stuff's been brewing for like, I mean, they've been around for 400 years, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, well. So. All right, so Märzen beer made in March. Don't drink it till October. It's almost
that's right.
Like, it's kind of like making babies. Make it in March, birth it in December.
That's right.
So, all right. So let's jump into the how to write killer ads and compelling sales copy. And we're on rule. These were rules, but Clayton said in this document, he's like, I don't really like rules, so these are kind of not rules. Rules.
The unrules. Ooh, so we're getting into the good part.
Yeah. We dropped off the kind of the, you know, a little bit more. There's all good stuff we covered 2 episodes ago, but this is now, we're at rule number 11, and it's the 75 most powerful words and phrases in the English language. We're not going to go through all 75. We'll just cherry pick a few. But these are words that are like, you know, kind of visceral. They kind of get your attention. A lot of them you've heard. But then we'll talk about some, try to mention a couple that people have not used as much.
Some of these I would question.
Yeah. Well, which one would you question? I'm curious.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going through the list, you know, and it goes from A to Z. So I'm thinking, you got amazing, astonishing, astounding, mm-hmm. announcing, appalling, at last, you know, all I can see, mm-hmm. Bargain, bonus, breakthrough, charter.
Charter member. That's like a charter membership.
Yeah, I know, but so it's just
first in line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I think if it's the right type of offer, I definitely like using charter.
Sure, you could. I could see there's ways you could certainly use that. Let's see. Easy. Those are good. Effortless. I like exclusive. Yep. Fearless. First time ever. All good. Discount. I don't know. You know, again, another word that can have a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Depending on how you use it, you know, discount makes me think I don't like using discount a lot of times because it cheapens, you know, you've got that cheapening effect, you know, and it really depends on the product that you're marketing. So,
yeah. And some of these you can combine, right? So you could do an exclusive discount.
Right.
And it sounds better than just a discount. Right.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's partly how you use these, combining some of these, you know, and these aren't all like headline words. They're headlines, subheads, and even throughout the copy. So one that stands out is for like throughout a copy would be inevitable.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Like to sprinkle that in, if you're talking about an event that's coming up or something like that, or a pain that you're moving towards. You know, you could say it's inevitable if you don't fix this problem, blah, 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 mm-hmm. something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think inevitable is a good, strong word that you don't hear a lot.
Yep.
Usually you want to go with a simpler word, but that's even though it's a bigger word, it has a lot of power.
Yep.
So that's one I liked. One I questioned at first. It's a phrase. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, but then I remember also, there's a phrase, and it's not on this list, but it's true. And I read that
somebody did
a test that if you put that at the top of your, like a Facebook ad, mm-hmm. you do it's true dot, dot, dot. And then you put the ad, like it just automatically gets higher click through, higher believability, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Just in a head to head test.
Yeah.
Nothing else changed. And I could see something similar with it's here, especially if you've been building up to something or it's, you know, Black Friday or
sure.
great for promotion type stuff.
Yeah. I think when we had Ben on, I think we talked about that in Facebook ads.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, that's a great way to start any Facebook ad. It really does. It captures attention. Here's one that I really like, in my industry that I've used a number of times, nothing to lose, because it takes away, if you're using that, I think that's a powerful way to take, because people are motivated obviously by, you know, they want to maintain what they have over gaining something typically. So they're trying not to lose. So they have a mm-hmm. fear of loss.
Right.
And they're more averse to losing something than they are, then they have a desire to gain something new. So when you use that phrase and you really, you know, depending on how you use it, nothing to lose, I find is very effective, especially in my industry where you're talking, you know, risk reward and what you have, you know, to evaluate and trial and determine the cost benefit. And then, you know, if somebody's on the edge of thinking, you know, what's this going to cost me, you know, nothing to lose, really kind of takes that away. So if you use that, if you phrase that word or that phrase in the right way, you can take away all of their fears that they have about kind of taking a risk or stepping out and trying something new.
Yep. Yeah. A couple others on this list, new, now.
Yep.
And like those sound like they're overused.
Yep.
But that's the thing about this list is these are words that just keep on working.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, new keeps on working, you know, throwing in the word now, you know, like now, comma, blah, 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 blah. You know, just it's kind of one of those subconscious things, one of those, you know, NLP type words that just get people, they work whether you want them to work or not, whether you believe they work or not, they continue to work.
Sure.
Another one is painless.
I like that
category, you know, painless. And then one that I don't hear as much is rush. I don't hear as much. And then this one, I just love the way it sounds. It's scandalous.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. It's,
like it's got the hard C in it and it's just, you know, it's a very strong word that when you hear it, you know exactly what it means. So when you, and when you apply that to maybe an event in an industry or things like that, and you have to remember, you know, Clayton wrote most of his stuff in either the financial or health spaces.
Yeah.
And there was kind of a lot of shock and awe and that kind of stuff in, in those niches. So you could talk about this, you know, the scandalous, you know, Democrats or the scandalous Republicans or the scandalous, you know, DC Beltway boys or whatever, right? You could talk about all those types of things. You could talk about the scandalous, you know, drug, big pharma, you know, and this, the scandalous types of products they're putting out and all these types of things. So scandalous is a great word if you can work it in. Shocking. Another one that just,
built intrigue.
Yeah. And again, these are not things you'd want to put all of these in one package or all of these in one letter even, but used, you know, in the right place at the right time, they definitely add some weight and some interest to the copy.
Yeah. Truth about. That's truth always a good.
Yeah. The truth about, you know, whatever. Usually, you know, that's, that works really good with like the truth about common enemy, right? Put the common enemy here. And then you can, so you start out with a truth that they already believe, and then you're starting the letter with something they already believe to be true. And now because you're on their side, you think the same way they do, you can jump into, you can kind of start to say other things that they may or may not believe, but you've already built rapport with them because you've said the truth about this. And you can also take, you know, just a big subject, you know, the truth about debt.
Yeah.
The truth about weight loss. Like everybody wants to know the truth. Nobody wants to be lied to.
Right.
And that's why that continues to work. And of course the all-time award winner, you.
Absolutely. Yeah,
just the word you. And we were actually doing some copy reviews today, company I'm working with, doing some consulting for, and we were going through things and, a lot of the writers were coming kind of with general stuff and we had to keep tweaking it down and remind them to get it right to the reader, as often as possible. Now, you know, in Facebook land, you can't necessarily do that, but in emails, you definitely can. In sales letters, you can, you know, all that kind of stuff. So use the word you, when you can get away with it for sure.
Yep. I like how he talks about in this, cause especially in this day, I mean, and he wrote this, this was kind of in the early days of probably Facebook, but you think about compliance in terms of Facebook ads today. So he uses that example down below of these investments are guaranteed to soar when interest rates rise. So this could be a potential problem if you were using this in a Facebook ad today, right? You can't guarantee anything. A weaker version of that would be these investments could possibly have the potential to soar. That's really weak, a weak version of saying, you know, trying to say the same thing. But I like that his compromise version, these investments have the power to soar when interest rates rise. So,
Having gone through this process, right? So the copywriter, we always train copywriters. I'm like, hey, write your best case. And then when the legal team comes back and says, this is not compliant, they'll come back. compliance version that he's talking about there is what they would probably write back. And that's why it's so weaselly and sounds so weak.
Right.
You know, because they're putting all these modifiers, these, you know what, I can't remember who it was, but one of the copywriters would call those weasel words.
Yep.
You know, could possibly.
Could possibly. Potential. That's just so weaselly. Yeah.
Yeah. Could possibly have the potential. Like that's all, you know, that's yep. all lawyer talk right, right there. So what you have to do is you have to learn how to split the difference. Mm-hmm. And I know going through the legal process with different, you know, companies, you can, I was told once about, you know, if you're ever working with an attorney, you never ask the attorney, can you say something? You ask them, how would you say this?
Right. Right.
Because if you ask them, can you, they're just going to say no.
No, exactly.
You know, or if, would you say this? They'll be like, no. But if you say, how would you say this? Then they have to give you an answer. Mm-hmm. So that tip right there is worth gold if you're ever working. And that's true for like any advice you're trying to get from an attorney, because they're always going to take the safest, mm-hmm. you know, route that's least litigated. So you need to ask them like, how would you do this? How would you say this? How could we make this happen? And then they'll give you their advice, but they're not going to volunteer it because that's just the way they've been trained. All right. So, which rule do you want, non-rule do you want to cover next?
We could go for 12. Do you want to spend any time on 12 or?
Yeah. So basically what this is, it's the name of it is squint. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that if you kind of squint when you look at the screen or a piece of paper, if it looks like one giant block of text, you need to put some white space in.
Right.
That's basically it. And a lot of people who follow us, they know, you know, varied sentences, put in, you know, bullet list, you know, do some bolds here and there, some italics here and there, not over the top, but enough that it kind of lets you know that there's different sections to this copy that are worth paying attention to.
Sure.
Otherwise it does, you know, we've all had the experience where we open up a text or an email and it's just one solid block of text and we're like, oh, right. I cannot read that right now. So you're looking for how can I get people to at least start scanning it? And then if something catches their attention, they'll start reading around it and read the whole thing.
Yep. Rule 13, go for precision and power. A lot of experts say you should use short words, write as if the prospect is an eighth grader. We've talked about this a lot. Some anal retentive rule addicts have even gone so far as to instruct students to add up all the letters in each paragraph and divide by the number of words and make sure the average word is no more than 5 letters long. That's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, I think the rule of thumb is to write like you talk to people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've used FK score, which obviously is a mathematical formula, but it doesn't get so, you know, worried about the length of a word. It's more about readability and clarity is really what FK score is about. But you know, like the list we were just read a little bit ago, like sometimes a bigger, longer word, even a 2 or 3 syllable word, you know, 3 syllable word is fine. Inconceivable. Like right. that's people know what that means. Like you don't want to pick a word that most of the public doesn't know. But he talks about, and he quotes William Zinsser in one of my favorite books that I recommend to new writers is On Writing Well. Mm-hmm. And it says, you know, beware then of the long word that is no better than the short word, numerous and many, right? So you'd pick many in that case,
yeah.
Facilitate and ease. Well, ease might be better, individual or man or woman, right? So I'd pick, you know, man or woman, unless you're in a gender neutral type, you know, place that you're writing. Remainder versus rest. You pick rest. Initial versus first. You pick first. Implement versus do. Pick do. But sometimes a longer word, even entire phrase, does convey more meaning, right? So we were talking on our last show with Phil, and he gave us a little exercise. He was like, hey, give me, you know, talk about salespeople.
Yeah.
And salespeople in general, you know, it's shorter than put an adjective in front of it. But we did this exercise. We're like, well, you know, a typical salesperson versus a professional salesperson. Right. Totally changed how we viewed the word salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes having extra words and modifier words makes a huge difference, and it's actually better than trying to cut it down,
right?
You know, to just salesperson or sales guy or whatever. So yeah, it's, you know, it goes back to, you know, using a little bit of common sense. And like you said, just write like you talk. Like, yeah, how would you say this if you were trying to describe it to a friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's another good rule. I like this. Look for shortcuts to keep the momentum going in your copy. He says, make liberal use of contractions. After all, it's how people talk. In fact, the only time I write does not instead of doesn't, and I do that all the time. I don't, you know, I use doesn't or, you know, isn't instead of is not, is when the not is crucial to the meaning. And if it's really crucial, I'll add emphasis to it with an underline, italicize it, capitalize it, and in some cases, all of the above. So,
yeah.
Short rule of thumb there is, again, write like you talk.
Yep.
Sean, I don't, when I'm talking to you, I typically do not say does not or is not. I'm usually saying doesn't or isn't, you know. So, absolutely. And that's typically how most people will talk, you know, in a conversation. So,
yeah, that's a thing that I have to edit when I see, when I edit other writers all the time.
Yeah.
Is editing contractions into their writing, because in high school and college, you know, you were taught not to use contractions.
Yep.
But the fact is, that's how most of us talk. Mm-hmm. And if you run across somebody who doesn't use contractions, it just sounds weird. They sound really like, you know,
stuffy, a little stuffy.
Yes. So, you don't want to sound stuffy in your writing. Mm-hmm. Plus it's just harder for the brain. Cause you know, most people, when they read out loud in their head.
Sure.
Right. So now you're having them slow down when you actually want them to keep the same pace. And that's one thing I think is really hard for people who write or trying to write to really get, is that there's a rhythm to writing. It's not just the words, it's the way the words flow.
Sure.
And you know, when you're reading something that's written really well, because you read it fast.
Yeah.
Like you go through two or three pages, you're like, wow, I just read six pages. I didn't realize I was, you know, past page one hardly. Yeah, that's the kind of feel that it wants. And that's, I think some of that is instinctual, and I think some of it is learned. I feel like I've always had kind of that ability in writing back in high school, and when we did little essays and writing prompts, it seems like I was able to write writing that read fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm not sure how much of it's learned and how much of it is, you know, picked up in speech, depending on your household. I don't know where it comes from exactly, but, the best way to discover that is to, if you write something, give it to somebody else to read out loud and then listen for where they stumble. And that's a good example. That'll tell you a lot about your writing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else on these that you want to?
No, not so much on these, unless you've got some. All right.
No, I mean, I think it's a good, so again, the name of the PDF, and you can find it online, is How to Write Killer Ads and Compelling Sales Copy by Clayton Makepeace. There are some different places online where you can find the PDF if you do a Google search for that. So you got a second book that you wanted to cover.
Yeah.
Separate, I guess, PDF.
Yeah, and this is a follow-up report to that. This is the 8 Components of an Irresistible Direct Response Offer. So you weren't able to find this, but so I'll just go through and you can kind of follow up. So the anatomy of a power-packed direct response offer, starts with number one. It says just about every offer you see is comprised of 8 major components. Rationale: great offers begin with a clear, credible explanation of why you're about to give away the farm. Maybe it's a special introductory offer. You're so sure that once the prospect experiences the benefits of your product, or experiences the benefit your product provides, he'll be a customer for life. So you've got to give the rationale in terms of, you know, in terms of the offer. That's the number one. That's, I guess, at the top.
Okay.
Whatever your rationale for amazing, astonishing, truly spectacular offer you're about to make, put it up in the lights. So, next, discount. Several things, again, there's that word, discount. Several things to think about here. First, it's the important to establish a regular price and make it seem like a really good value. To make your regular price believable, specifics are crucial. Tell your prospect when your product has been offered or sold for full price, or even how many thousands of folks have paid the full price for that product. Then demonstrate why even at full price, your product is a screaming deal. Show how your product will save them or even make them many times your regular price. I do this a lot when, you know, marketing or doing sales presentations or marketing to companies, like, you know, showing them the regular, like the regular price. And even at that regular price compared to maybe something they're buying of at a cheaper price, you know, how that, you know, how that contrasts and how that looks, and the opportunities it affords them within the costing, you know, and just kind of presenting it that way. But let's see, purchase options.
Oh, go ahead. I found it, by the way. I found the PDF. So,
okay,
cool.
Giving them purchase options is crucial. So you notice this, like, in online sales copy today, if you don't give people options for buying, yes. And you're seeing this more and more. I mean, I'm seeing it from everything nowadays. You go to a site to buy, you know, even a shirt, they'll give you buying options for, companies will give you buying options for a shirt. Like, you can make payments on a shirt. It's like incredible.
Yeah. I'm seeing it on like protein powder.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, oh, or you could do this for, you know, $8.50 a month. I'm like, it's a month supply. Like, eventually that's going to catch up with me. Right.
Right.
I'll be back to the normal price, 'cause I've got 4 months, you know, $8 payments coming due.
Right.
But you know, the idea is it lowers the barrier to entry. People are skeptical, you know, or whatever, they're between paychecks, mm-hmm. whatever it might be. It gives people a chance to, you know, put, and you know, the company that I think did a really good job with this, and kind of made the payments really successful is all the home shopping networks, right?
Yeah.
The QVCs, HSNs, they all have like the 5-pay plan. Mm-hmm. And even before that, maybe not before that, but remember the old Finger Hut magazines?
Oh yeah.
The catalogs that came to your home and it had all the junk in them, and you could buy a vacuum cleaner for, mm-hmm. you know, 12 payments of, you know, $15 instead of having to pay the whole thing up front. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it definitely works for especially if you know your niche is on a budget. You're right.
Yeah. And maybe people want to spread out, even if they can afford it, maybe people mm-hmm. want to spread out the payments just because right. like they, especially if there's no interest or anything like that, they're like, well, shoot, I'll just spread those payments out anyway. You know, it's like, you know, with Apple this week, I bought a new phone and an iPad, you know, it's like cost me like $2,700. Like when all is said and done, it's like a lot of money, you know, that you can drop all at one time, but then they give you these interest-free payment options that you can spread it out. And like, why wouldn't you break that down? Because you can kind of, if there's no interest involved whatsoever, there's an incentive to that. You can spread that out. You can take the, from a business standpoint, you can take the, you can use the
full value,
the full value of buying it this year. 'Cause you like, you know, you ordered it. And so you can go ahead and take the deduction for this year and then spread that payment out for next year. So, sometimes that makes sense for businesses to do stuff like that.
Yeah. And you know, I think the sweet spot, and he kind of talks about this in here, is like 3 to 5 payments. Mm-hmm. Unless you start getting really, you know, pricier, then you might want to do 12, 12 months, same as cash, or sure. 12 installments. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you get really expensive, like into cars and things like that, and you're going to the 60 months,
yeah,
no interest, you know, that kind of stuff. But I mean, I've done that on cars, right? It's like,
oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like, man, you're going to give me free interest. Yeah. And it probably did help me pull the trigger, mm-hmm. you know, on that car, because I'm like, well, it doesn't really cost me anything extra, you know? So, other than depreciation and all that stuff,
but, sure.
You know, I don't care about that stuff. So just wanted the new car.
Yeah, exactly. So,
which I kind of is kind of the fourth thing he talks about here is payment terms. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of the same thing. Purchase options and payment terms are kind of similar. What do you think the difference there is? Purchase options, I guess, is the way you can pay. And I guess payment terms is how those things
right,
are.
How they extend out. Purchase options yeah. means what you can use. I guess you can use, you know, whether you use PayPal, whether you use Venmo or
right.
whatever your preferred option. I find it, just on a side note, you're talking about cars. I find it interesting, like, you know, just the whole process of how you can order a Tesla today. Like yeah. you go to their website and literally that, I mean, there's a video. It shows a guy just within a few clicks ordering his Tesla.
Yeah. It's crazy. Well, it's like Carvana now too, right? It's mm-hmm. like you buy the whole thing online and they, mm-hmm. you either get a token and you get it out of one of their vending machines.
Right.
Or they deliver it to your house.
Exactly.
That's hard for me to wrap my head around, but obviously it's, and that's a great example of like, you can't write to your, you know, a lot of times you want to write to yourself as your avatar if you really know it. But at the same mm-hmm. time, if I wrote just to me,
yeah,
I would have never started Carvana as a, right. as a company.
Right.
Like, I just don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I want to test drive it.
Sure.
I want to sit in it. I want to feel how the seats feel, all that kind of stuff. But apparently there's a lot of people out there that they're like, man,
yeah.
just ship it to me. I'm good.
Yeah. And I think it's like younger people, like they don't want the hassle of going out there. They just want everything brought to them. So
because of the sleazy salespeople that we talked about in the last episode,
it's just serving
that is a big part of that.
Huh? Yeah. That,
like they don't want to talk face to face to people.
That's right.
That is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and go through the 3-hour, you know,
sure.
sales process
right.
and all that stuff when you can just do it from the comfort of your home.
Right.
So, and you know, they do have an out for that, right? It's like you get a warrant. I think you get a, so many days to yeah. try the car if you don't like it. Mm-hmm. And they know hardly anybody's going to return a car.
Right.
Like once you get it, you're kind of going to, you'll be fine with it.
Absolutely.
So the fifth thing he talks about in this premiums. Is premiums.
Yep.
And this is really, a lot of people talk about this. I don't think most people do a very good job of it. Mm-hmm. And the rule of thumb that I've seen for premiums is that one, they need to be very similar to what you're already selling.
Sure.
They need to be very congruent. Mm-hmm. And two is they should be able to stand on their own. Like people would pay for them on their own.
Yeah.
Too many times I see people throw in stuff that didn't sell or that's not very interesting, but they're just trying to pump up the value. So they just throw any old thing in. Like if it won't sell by itself, then it's not going to work as a bonus either.
Sure.
It's just, yeah. It's just
I
not.
Think one person that comes to mind, you know, we've had Bob Bly on our show in the past. Mm-hmm. I think he yep. does a really good job of this. Cause if you've ever bought, like if you go to, you know, his website is over at bly.com. So if you buy any of like his information, which I bought a ton of his like, you know, PDFs and information products, but he always gives a premium like bonus. Like if you buy something. And it's yeah. just not garbage too. I mean, it's typically right. like an ebook that's like got a lot of information in there. And, you know, he just like, he throws that in as a bonus and you immediately get access to it. So, and I know a lot of guys do that, but I feel like he just does that really well. Cause it's not like just like some like 2-page or 3-page report that he throws in on top of like what you're getting. It's like really a, like another ebook that's got a lot of value to it. So, I mean, I think that's the important thing is make sure that what you're offering, whatever your premium product or whatever you're throwing in is like major, you know, it's got a lot of value. It's just not something that you created that's like really cheap and easy to get out there.
Yeah, it needs to be complimentary too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
sometimes exactly. people are throwing in stuff that doesn't really make sense because they've got it on their hard drive or something, right? Companies that do this really well is Beachbody, right? You buy a fitness program. Well, you probably need a diet. You probably need supplements.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, they do a good job of that. And then they have the membership now where you can get all their courses, you know, as part of the membership. Those are all congruent.
Right.
I'm trying to think right now of something that would, an example that would not be congruent that I've seen. I can't think of anything right now, but I've definitely seen them in the past where, you know, somebody's selling a, you know, maybe a copywriting course, and then they throw in like 101 businesses you can start from home. It's like, well, I thought copywriting was the thing.
Yeah, right.
It's got
right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
I've got these 100 other things just because it sounded cool, right?
Yeah.
Hey, if this doesn't work,
right.
Try all these things.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the angle you want to go with.
No. And the likelihood that you're going to be, or you're going to, you know, be interested in that when you're buying something, you know, you're buying a copywriting course, you know, the whole reason you're buying a copywriting course is to be a copywriter, not learn some, all these other businesses or.
Right. Right. You don't want to confuse people and all that. Right. And you want to keep that confidence all the way through the bonuses. Like this is complementary to what you're learning.
Right.
Like for instance, let's just stick with the copywriting example. If I'm selling a copywriting course, then, you know, 13 emails you can write to win new business as a copywriter.
Absolutely.
That's a great bonus. Yeah. Right. Now it's like, oh, cool, a template. I don't even have to think about it. I'm going to need new clients.
Right.
I would pay for that anyway. And that, I think that's really the standard. Mm-hmm. Like if you made it an upsell, would people buy it? Mm-hmm. Or if it was a standalone product, would people buy it? If not, it's not good enough for a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Especially a done for you type bonus. Like that.
Those are great. Yeah.
Yeah, those are
templates are great bonuses. Anything done for you is a great bonus. Done for you is really better as an upsell. Mm-hmm. I think templates are great for bonuses.
Yeah.
People love templates. They're like, yeah, I want to learn this, but like we talked about with Phil on the last show, like they're not buying the course, they're buying the result the course gives them. Yeah. So if you can get them to that result faster with templates or something else, software, you know, whatever else, then that can push them over the edge. And sometimes they'll buy just for the templates, not for the actual course. Yeah. Because they think that's a shortcut and gets them to the result faster.
Right.
All right. So number six on this list of eight, what was it called? Eight components of an irresistible direct response offer. So number six is?
A guarantee.
Guarantee. Got to have a guarantee.
Guarantee.
Well, so that's not true. You don't have to have a guarantee. There is a place and time, you know, ask Ben Settle, like he doesn't guarantee anything. Right.
Right.
At least no money back guarantees, right? You can make other guarantees. It doesn't have to be a money back guarantee, but that is the most traditional. That is, you know, but talk about the performance, not just like the money back, right? So I've seen guarantees where, you know, we guarantee that if you do the work, you could do like a do the work guarantee. Like we guarantee if you do the work, you'll get this result.
Yeah.
You know? And then you can throw in or your money back. Mm-hmm. But so the guarantee doesn't have to be money back. It can just be that if you apply yourself, if you follow the instructions, if you do the step-by-step, do the worksheets, then you'll get this result.
Right. I think if you're going to do a money back guarantee, I think probably the best rule of thumb is to make it, I know this goes against conventional wisdom, but like, don't go, like he says, you know, don't be like a 60 day or a 30 day because people are going to like set their clocks, you know, or the calendars. But if you give them enough space to like be comfortable, you know, like I know, like I think again, going back to Bob Bly or other copywriters out there that they use, you know, like a 1 year type guarantee. Well, what that does is it gives the person that buys it enough time to kind of relax and not worry about having to, you know, about like if they've not satisfied, you know, they've got plenty of time. So what happens? I mean, you know the deal. People tend to forget about stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and you know, and that shouldn't be your goal. You're like, oh, well, I hope they forget. Right. You still want them to get the result.
Sure.
Right. But I agree. Like if it's 30 days, they feel a lot of pressure. Yeah. And they'll circle that on their calendar and they're like, oh crap.
And they don't get the benefit of it. I mean, they don't get the benefit. Like this gives you time that they can actually spend time going through. Like you said, it's not you don't have to use it in a manipulative way, but it gives them time where they don't feel like they're rushed.
Yeah. And you can give them an email series that follows up and says, you know, here's what you do week one, here's what you do week two. And it doesn't have to, it could be a 52 week calendar.
Right.
Or give them an option. You know, you could say, look, here's your 30 day success calendar. Here's your 90 day success calendar. Here's your 1 year success calendar, depending on how quickly or slowly you need to go through this. And no matter what, you're covered by our 365 day guarantee.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, okay. So there is a fast path for those who want to do it fast. There's kind of a medium path and then there's a long-term path, right?
Right.
You know, you see this with like night schools and, you know, colleges that offer degree completion programs, right? They're like at your leisure, man. Like take your time. You go through the courses as you need to. It's not, because we know you're busy and those kind of things. And that works because people know that they're going to be busy and they're going to get distracted. Mm-hmm. So if you let them know it's okay to be that way, and we'll still guarantee it, you know, it gives them a little bit more comfort. You also don't sound as desperate, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, oh my God, I better put a short guarantee so that they can't charge back. You know, and then, you know, you do have to keep in mind, like if you're using a payment processor, some of those don't like the, you know, especially if you get past a year, like you do a lifetime guarantee. Payment processors hate that stuff.
Oh,
so
sure.
Kind of have to be careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, Jay Abraham, I think he talked about the longer the guarantee, the lower the refund rate. Yeah, he talked about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. So number seven.
Urgency premiums.
So this is like the premium, but at an extra level, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the bonus offer. And people that actually do this and stick to it, it works really well, I think.
Right.
Where let's say you're going to say that, you know, the new class starts, the new program that we're running starts, you know, December 1st or January 1st, and you're doing kind of an early bird launch. Like, you know, if you enroll before, let's say it starts January 1st, if you enroll before December 15th, you'll get these extra bonuses. But after December 15th, those bonuses are gone. You only get the regular bonuses. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an extra level of bonuses that create urgency. And that's why they're called urgency premiums.
Yep.
You want to get people who are kind of looking at it to not wait. And because you and I both know, if you've done any launches, you know that most of the sales happen like in the last 24 hours. Like I think the statistic is around half of all sales happen the last 24 hours, no matter how long your buildup is. Mm-hmm. At least half, if not two thirds.
Sure.
So anytime you can pull some of that forward to get people to make that decision earlier, the better. You'll probably still end up with half to two thirds decide like the hour before the cart closes. Mm-hmm. Cause that's just the way humans are. We like to procrastinate as long as possible.
Yep.
All right. And then number eight is fulfillment considerations. So this is all about, you know,
wanting it
not
now.
Having to wait. Yeah. I want it now.
We're like, Americans. We're not patient.
Yeah. How can I get it quick? Right. How can I get my Big Mac? I don't want to have to get out of the car for my Big Mac. Can I just drive around and get it?
Right.
Yes, you can. The exception to that would be Chick-fil-A, where if you're in the drive-thru, it's going to take twice as long as...
Yep.
I went by Chick-fil-A the other night and I was like, this is unreal. Like I'm driving down the main road and you can see the Chick-fil-A. It's got a double drive through wrapped around the building like twice. Like it looks like LA traffic around the Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
Like that is just, you know.
Yet it still takes less time than going into a McDonald's to order.
Yeah.
By the time you get through there.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but
you can still, I mean, you get in that line and you're gone, you're through there in no time. So,
yeah, But it's still faster to park and go in that case. But
yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that, right? They want convenience.
Right. That's right.
So, cause you can do other stuff while you're sitting in the car. Plus you don't have to get the kids out and all that stuff. So think about like what fulfillment considerations are there? Yeah. You know, you don't want somebody hitting their credit card and then nothing shows up. Right. Like virtually in person or anything for 4 to 6 weeks. Like people get really antsy like that. And just like the excitement's gone. So you know, you're not going to get the testimonials. You're not going to get a lot of the other stuff because you've just completely lost.
Sure.
Lost that momentum from the sale.
Yeah. And absolutely. And keep in mind that people, especially if they're taking physical, if you're selling a physical product, people will pay more to get it, you know, if it's next day or within 2 days, they're more than happy to pay the extra. Yeah.
That's why people pay $79 a year for Amazon Prime or whatever it is now, you know, or Costco, you know, the executive membership. So you get in 2 hours before everybody else, you know, all those things are kind of a type of fulfillment, you know, to be able to get access. And that's, you know, people love that.
Yeah.
So I want to add one thing to this list that's not on this list, if I can.
Yeah.
And Dan Kennedy does this better than anybody else in the business. And that is walking three people through the sales process. And this is kind of at the offer and the close section, really the close, I guess. Dan Kennedy talks about this where it's like, you know, if you're writing a letter, you know, online sales, like show them what the next page, the checkout page looks like.
Sure.
Show them the thank you letter they're going to get when they, you know, when they like walk them through all the steps before they take the steps. And if you can do screenshots of the actual page and you know what the box is going to look like when it shows up on their porch, like all those things, it gives people a sense of like calm and safety.
Sure.
And they know what to expect, right? Because the biggest thing is like people hate this fear of uncertainty. They don't know exactly how things are going to happen. So if you can show the whole process, you know, the guy in the warehouse packing the thing up, here's the boxes we use, all that stuff, it adds a lot of comfort for people.
Oh yeah.
And then when it happens that way, now you've told the truth and they're like, oh, this is exactly what he said it would be.
Sure.
Before they even get the product, like the steps to getting the product was exactly what the person said it would be. The company said it would be. And that instills a lot of like trust and future goodwill for their next order and their next order. And I think that's something people just don't do enough of, you know? Mm. So you've got this list of reports. How's it going to be delivered? Like explain all that, you know, hey, once you get your thank you email, you're going to open your email. You're going to see three emails. You're going to see one that's an invoice, one that's a login, and one that's your bonus download. Subject lines are going to be this, this, and this. Here's what they look like. And, you know, if you're using Gmail, here's what they look like.
Sure.
And it sounds like a lot of extra work and it's extra work, but it's pretty quick. And you can just put it right in the sales letter, but I tell you the difference it makes as far as people's comfort level is off the charts.
Yeah. And probably you've lowered just in that one step alone, you've lowered the amount of, you know, people asking for refunds or, you know, because they're confused by the process, you know, they've gone through it and they're like, this is too confusing and they want their money back or something like that. So if you can eliminate that, or you can add that one step in the process, you're eliminating a lot of, you know, pain down the road, you know, from getting, you know, people that want to charge back, doing chargebacks or things like that. So.
Yeah, and if you don't want to write it all out and take screenshots, just do a video walkthrough, you know, use a service like Loom or something and just, you know, do a quick, you know, 3-minute recording, say, hey, you know, here's when you press order, you're going to fill in your information like this. Here's what the order form looks like. You know, here's the thank you page. You'll go to your email, blah, blah, blah. Like you just kind of walk them through the process. And then like I said, the coolest thing is when it happens the way you said it happens. So make sure your systems and processes are up to date. You know, don't change all your back end after you write the sales letter. You know, that's why a video might be good because it's easy to change out in the copy. Mm-hmm. It builds so much rapport and trust because it happens exactly the way you said it would happen.
Yeah.
You know, we've all ordered something and it didn't happen the way they said it would.
Right.
And we just get frustrated, right?
Absolutely. So
make sure your back end is dialed in, your delivery systems are dialed in if you're going to do that. But if they are, definitely take advantage of that, because hardly anybody does that.
Right.
Very rare that you see a company that does that. All right. Well, man.
Thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can find us over at Persuasion by the Pint. You can find us on any of your podcast listening apps or whatever you use to listen to any of your apps, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, any of those platforms. And then also you can find us over at our Facebook group over at PersuasionByThePint.com, or I'm sorry, Facebook.com/groups/PersuasionByThePint. And Sean, it's been fun, man. We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.